Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 27th day of March, Anno Domini 2021. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Once again, Steve Ray, one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest. Although he is maintaining COVID restrictions by not being here.
That's right.
Important.
And as per my contract, there will be no video today.
There will be no video. It's in Dennis's contract. There's nothing we can do about
it. And we have faces for radio.
We do have that.
We've made that claim for over 30 years.
And we've been correct.
Listeners, we're even more handsome than you might expect.
That's true.
As far as you know.
It would be horrible for people to suddenly fall in love with Dennis all over the country because they finally saw his face on YouTube.
Yeah.
So we prevent that.
We won't be
service, really.
We will not be held responsible.
Exactly. All right, the news. LG makes consumer electronics. Some, like their televisions, home appliances, and computers, are pretty popular. But one market they've never really been able to crack is cell phones. Now LG is looking to shut down its mobile phone arm. The business would be shuttered instead of being sold off, the report said, citing an unnamed source who said negotiations of a sale to Volkswagen and Vingroup JSC have stalled. That follows a report in January that LG was looking to scrap its phone business despite having just premiered its new rollable phone tech at CES 2021. LG in February denied reports that it was canning its new rollable phone, the LG Rollable. But and that's one of those things. That's something I've always wanted.
What?
It's essentially just a little kind of a baton, a little short, fat baton.
Uh-huh.
And you pull the phone out from the side.
Like a scroll?
You scroll, like unrolling a scroll. It's just,
following tweets have just arrived.
Well, they were also going to have that one that you could hit the button on your wrist.
Oh, right. And it would project?
And it would project across your arm.
Yeah, that's
and you could sit there and type.
Secret Cricket? I think
did
it was
that ever,
the secret.
I saw a lot of videos about that, but did that ever no.
It was a load of hooey.
Uh-huh.
Let's just put it that way.
I was trying to be
the thing was
polite,
a scam
yeah.
all the way around.
Well, that was a cool idea.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, just like building that bridge from California to Hawaii.
Oof. That's a
yeah,
bridge.
Right.
Yikes.
Right.
All right. So, yeah, being able to unroll your phone seems like a cool thing. I'm really interested in the form factor where you sort of fold the phone in half, a lot like the old Razr phones from Motorola.
Yeah,
it's all screen on the inside.
Those are very cool.
Yeah, but how long are they going to last? I mean,
we'll see.
That's a great question. I think they've been out for at least a year, and I haven't heard too much about
those yet. The first ones from, I think it was Samsung, I think. Anyway, the first ones were horrible because the hinges were horrible.
Yeah.
Dirt got in them and screwed them all up, and they were miserable, horrible things. Version 2 was much better.
Right.
But my big question, whether it's this phone or any other phone?
Battery life. I know. That's all you care about.
Let me finish this. Yeah, go ahead.
LG in February denied reports it was canning its new rollable phone. But it has been reported that LG has canceled its plan to launch rollable phones in the first half of 2021. The hugely competitive global smartphone business is being led by Samsung, Xiaomi, Apple, Oppo, and Huawei, with multiple foldable phones on the market, and Apple is reportedly working on one.
That is a heck of a tongue twister to do all those.
Thank you very much.
I'm impressed. Nice
Thank
job.
You. Thank you. LG is exploring a variety of options. LG is exploring, now
sorry,
I can't
I
say the
soon.
Regular words, exploring a variety of options in light of the headwinds facing our mobile business. According to Michelle Lef Mermelstein, LG's head of U.S. public relations. Back in the day, they produced the legendary LG G2, and they were manufacturers of the iconic Nexus 5, Nexus 5X, and the Google Pixel 2 XL. And they've had some really innovative, one might say whacked out devices like the LG Wing, a phone whose screen swivels to reveal a second, smaller screen underneath. But none of their phones have lately been much of a seller. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is LG is looking to sell their phone business. But, of course, they may just shutter it if nobody buys it. And your choices are, I love my LG phone. I used to have one. They make nice TVs, though. I won't miss them. And other. So far, we've got 50 votes. I love seeing lots of votes in the poll.
Yeah.
I really do. So far, we've got 50 votes. And I used to have one is just ahead of I won't miss them. Hmm. And if you did say other, then please head over to our forums at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 27 Mar 21, LG looking to sell their phone business. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free. 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, no, like you said, what I still say, and we were talking about just before the show started, the biggest thing for a lot of these companies is they don't have any great feature that they can tout. You know, that's, iPhone folks that would stand in line the night before.
Yes. Apple people are crazy. Let's just get that right out in the open.
I'm trying to be polite. I know.
But you're talking about something called the killer app. You know, it's the reason that you go buy that product is so that you can do X, fill in the blank. Right.
And that
have that lately?
That has long gone. Just like Microsoft, you know, with their Word package and everything else. There's nothing really, I got to have that. Oh, yes, I can't live without it. The one thing they're missing is, like I've said for the past 2 years, is battery life. Yep. Folks, if you sit there and, you know, demand more battery life, that's what folks want. Because let's face it, right now, Zoom meetings and, you know, kids learning from home and everything else. What's the big thing? They've got to have the battery life. And nothing worse than in the middle of a class, you know, all of a sudden their laptop dies because they're sitting on the couch and they didn't have it plugged in. And all of a sudden they get disconnected.
Right.
The battery life is the key thing as they focus on that. So what if it's a couple millimeters bigger? The battery life is what's driving folks, and everybody's wanting to watch stream video. I mean, with the 5G now, you know, to sit there and put a phone, you know, with the bigger screens, sit there and watch a movie or a TV show on your phone and then have the battery die.
Right. I think what we're seeing is that instead of increasing the mass of the device, instead of increasing the dimensions physically and making it heavier, you know, they're not that heavy to begin with, but I'm sure you know what I mean. They're looking at it from the opposite direction about how do we make the chips smaller and more power efficient to better use the battery life that we have. And I think we're seeing a lot of companies move forward in that direction.
Well, that was Apple's entire idea with the M1.
Well, that's true. And speaking of M1.
Speaking of M1, great
right
segue.
Yeah.
Segway Sam over here. Yeah. I have with me on this very program a 13-inch M1 MacBook Pro. And I'm here to say that the battery life on this thing is no joke. It is legitimately very, very nice.
Nice.
I highly recommend it. If you were the kind of person who could only barely get through a workday on your laptop, this is a considerable improvement.
Good.
And everything else about it, it's the same screen size, it's the same dimensions, it's the same size and weight, but highly more efficient in terms of how it uses its battery. And it's still super perky in performance. You know, usually you have to dial down the performance to get the battery life to be this high. But no, this is perky all the time. If you, as they said,
it's a risk chip, isn't it?
It is, you know. Yeah. So Apple's back to doing risk stuff. It's 1993 all over again.
Back to the future.
So the pendulum has swung back in that direction, and you know, as they said in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, you know, if you have the means.
Yeah, right.
I highly recommend it.
And I should explain what risk is, but before we do that, Don't forget, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. RISC stands for Reduced Instruction Set Computer, or chip, depending on who you talk to. And what that means is, here's how it worked for Apple. Apple took a look at all of their products and took a look at all of the instructions that were used in those products and realized that there were a bunch of instructions in the Intel chipset that were not used ever by anything, ever. And if they were, it was so very rare that simulating them with other instructions was still
efficient. Yeah.
Right. And so what they did was they created a chip based on that reduced instruction set. And so because it only does those things, it can do them faster and cleaner and more efficiently.
Right. Well, and they're able to bring things like the memory, instead of being across the circuit board in little holsters, they can bring that onto the chip itself. So the signals don't have as far to go, and you can use a different flavor of memory when it's on chip as well that is much faster.
Right, and it's much faster to get to it. And not only is the memory itself faster, but getting into and out of the memory is much faster.
Right. Right.
So there's huge improvements there.
Right. Now, we're oversimplifying a lot of the details.
A lot.
We're filling in a lot of the potholes involved here. But the bottom line is, this allows you to do perky performance and get reasonable battery life, or considerably improved battery life compared to what you may be used to.
Right.
Very the other thing that is a difference that I've noticed, because I had the previous generation MacBook Pro, the Intel model. The Intel model I really liked using through the winter because the palm rests would stay nice and toasty warm. And every once in a while, when I'd get on a Zoom call with my external monitor, you'd hear the fans, and that would help you know that the computer was still alive and doing what it needed to do. But this one, man, I don't think I've heard the fan yet. I'm pretty sure there is one in there, but I haven't heard it yet. It's just thermally more efficient, less of a heat byproduct.
Heat dissipation
is the other
problem.
Air, which is sort of the baby brother to this model, doesn't even have a fan. It's entirely passively cooled. That's right.
Right.
How do they cool in it?
Well, and
they use a more efficient chip.
They use a more efficient chip, and it doesn't get as hot.
Okay, so
that's the M1 chip.
Yeah. Okay.
That's the two problems, three problems, because there's that whole business with the keyboard. But the two big
problems... I have good news about that, too, but we'll come back to that. Go ahead.
It's here, too. The two other problems are the size of the battery you can put in one of those things.
Right, yeah. The airlines have a rule that says you can't have more than, 100 watt-hours?
Yeah, I believe that's what
something
it is.
Like that.
But the second issue, of course, is that they just are not efficient in cooling when there's that little space to run air in.
Right.
And that's true of all of them. That's true of this, but it doesn't ever get that warm because it doesn't.
He's patting his Chromebook, listeners.
I'm patting my Chromebook. And that's also true of your phone, and that's also true of your laptops and your desktops.
Right.
Why do you think desktops have so much space in them that's just wasted? It's not wasted. It's to let the air circulate and cool.
Right.
Yep. Like we said, it's like a huge vacuum cleaner.
Yeah.
It sucks air in one through the front. And the fans on the back are blowing it on out. That's why there's so many vents on the front, and you'll see this screening on the side of it. It's to get more air in and have those bigger muffin fans in the back, along with the power supply, sucking all that heat out.
And you should also, just before we go to the phones, poor Mark is waiting patiently.
We'll get to you, Mark, I swear.
We will get to you. But those of you who have not checked in a while, check the front vents on your computer to see if they're clogged. Open the thing up and take a look inside and see, and maybe turn it off first, of course.
Right.
But
leave it plugged in, but turn it off.
You got to leave it plugged in. That's the key thing. No, don't unplug it.
Why do you leave it plugged in?
Just to ground yourself.
To ground it.
Yeah, because what I recommend is when you pull that side of the case off, first thing you're going to do is touch the case to make sure you're grounded.
The inside of the case.
Yep. Well, just even on the top of the case.
As long as it's metal.
Yep, as long as you're touching metal, and then look, and you can sit there. Don't use the compressed air.
Mm.
The only reason you don't want to use compressed air, there's moisture in that.
Okay.
And if you're blowing that on chips, you can call it a short. Whereas if you just take your vacuum cleaner, take the hose to that, and go around lightly and suck it on out, suck all your dirt out, you're good to go. Otherwise, you can only use a compressor if you have an inline filter that will remove all the moisture. Because you don't want to go shorting something out, sitting there spraying that stuff all in, and it gets cold, and then the moisture gets in there and shorts out a chip or that, you're toast.
Yep. All right, finally, to the phones. Poor Mark from Greece, New York. Hiya, Mark. What's up?
I'm good, guys. I'll wait. I love listening to you guys.
Thanks, thanks.
Hey.
You need therapy,
Ding.
Mark.
Yeah, I probably do.
Help is
What's
coming.
Up?
That's okay. Funny that you mentioned that. I've seen a guy on YouTube use a leaf blower to clean out.
Oh boy.
Computer that, cases.
That yeah. may be a bit much, depending on
low power. That wouldn't be bad as long as you're doing it outside. I wouldn't want to blow it around.
Well, you had a compressor.
Yeah, we had a compressor outside. We had literally a table that I made outside, and I ran an airline out there.
Right.
And what I did is I had an inline filter. And that literally, every so often, you had to drain the water out of this little pool. Because, again, you get all this. The birds and all that loved it. Because we would be blowing out some cases sometimes, and you thought there was a dust storm.
Sure.
And you'd see the birds after coming around picking up the tufts of dirt.
Yep. For their nest.
Picking it up and taking it out to their nest.
Good insulation.
Yeah.
I was worried about the fans when he's doing this because, I mean.
No, that won't hurt him.
It won't hurt spinning those fans really fast.
No.
They're all on either ball bearings and they don't have brushes on them.
They're sealed inside. Okay. And they're lubricated, so you're not.
You won't burn them out.
No.
And even if you do, the price of fans these days is negligible.
I haven't in all the years that I've been doing it, and that's quite a few.
As long as the machine is off and the fan isn't fighting the air trying to spin like in the other direction or something.
Yeah, no, we've done it plenty of times.
Sure.
It's funny that you mentioned the LG phones. I just recently put mine to bed. Just for any other reason that it was a hand-me-down for my daughter, so of course I ended up with it because the kids always
have
their phones. You know, used to be the opposite way. It's not like that anymore.
No. When they're kids and they hand you gum, you take it.
That's right.
When they're older and they hand you their old phone, you take it.
That's right.
Well, that old trick of taking a dime from them and giving them a nickel because they think it's bigger, it's worth more.
Yeah.
Those days are gone, you know. But anyways, I loved my LG. I had a Stylo 3, with the stylus, and it was a really nice phone, very big. But I had to go to a Motorola now. I got an Optimo Max phone. And what I was going to ask you is I was reading a lot of places that say about charging your phone, like you've always said, don't charge it 100%, don't ever let it die. Okay.
Right.
Somewhere I read that they say keeping your phone charged between 40 and 80% is the optimal way of doing it.
Yep.
Keeping the negative and positive flow as even as possible. Is this something that's true?
Yes.
And something that is likely to do, that I could do and not have to worry about it?
Yes. The basic idea is that when you let the charge go too low or too high, it really stresses the battery. And the more you stress the battery, the shorter the life.
Right.
Keeping it between 40 and 80% is the least stressful. Now, obviously, if you're going to take a long trip, you want to charge your phone before you go and stuff like that. But on a day-to-day basis, keeping it between 40 and 80%. And remember, battery life is generally listed in how many charges the battery can take.
Full charges,
But they're
cycles.
Full charges.
Cycles,
they're
yeah.
cycles from done to full to done.
Yeah. So if you're going from 40 to 80, that's really not a full charge.
Right.
That's not a full cycle.
It lasts much longer.
And then I saw in the Google Play Store, there's a app you can run that gives you an audible and vibration warning when your phone's at 40 and when it's at 80, so you mind you to charge it.
Well, that's interesting.
So I'm thinking I may be doing this because if you say it's golden, it's golden.
Yeah,
it is. It is. What was the name of that app?
Oh, I'm not sure. I can text it to you.
Yeah, okay. Please.
I will do that when I get off the phone.
Yeah, perfect. We'll put it on the website.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Yep. Bye-bye.
So, interesting thing I learned this week on YouTube, because I spend way too much time on YouTube.
Welcome to that club.
Is I was researching hybrid vehicles, because I'm interested in hybrid vehicles, and I'm interested in plug-in electrics and those kind of things. And I was watching a documentary about the design of the original Toyota Prius when they were working on that in the 90s. And they said the same thing about their batteries, between 40 and 80%. And that is the place that they worked from. And they had chips inside and safeguards to prevent it from going more than 80 and less than 40% in its hybrid system.
Nice.
So I was interested to see that those numbers had come up again here for the second time in a week.
Yeah. This is what, we've been saying this for a while. Keeping your phone between 40 and 80% gives you the best battery life, not one charge life, but lifetime
extension
of the battery.
Yeah. Yes.
So if you're one of those people who absolutely must have the newest iPhone every year, you don't care how long the battery lasts because you're going to get rid of it after a year.
Right.
But for the rest of us who are either miserly or...
We'll call you the buy and hold crowd.
The buy and hold crowd. Keeping your phone between 40 and 80% is preferable in terms of length of life of the battery itself.
Before
again,
replacement.
Not charge.
Right.
And of course, you can't replace many batteries these days.
Right. Well, yeah, not yourself. It's not user serviceable.
Right.
That way.
But yeah, so keeping your phone between 40 and 80%. And hopefully Mark will text us the name of that app, and that'll be a good thing.
Speaking of the Prius, you want to see a good bit on the Prius.
Okay.
Check out Jeff Durham.
Jeff Durham.
Yeah, okay. The comedian.
Oh, Dunham.
Yeah, Dunham.
Dunham, yes.
He does a great bit on Prius. He talks about him, his wife, and his kids.
Well, he's a well-known car guy. You know, what the British would call a petrol head. You know, he's interested in those kinds of things.
He is something else on that whole bit. That is a very good bit if you want to check out something and have a lot of, get a real good laugh on.
I've seen some videos of his collection. He was getting some like 1970s vans and redoing all of the crazy styling that they were well known for. Very interesting.
Yep.
Very cool. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. Holy cow. That means it's Sound Bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And the program Mark was talking about is the battery charge notifier, which I'm trying to add here while I talk.
You're doing great.
Thank you.
Especially since you finished your very intensive yoga workout during the break there. Whew. 2 weeks in a row.
Man, that was a lot. That was a lot. I'm, it's the...
But the downward-facing donut is really coming along.
The downward donut. Exactly right. Now I've published that to the show, so we're good there.
Ta-da.
ta-da. And
we are not, we should warn folks, they can't see us.
They can't see us. Like I said, it's in my contract.
Right. We're not on YouTube. Steve is not here. And Dennis is. Dennis is not allowed to show his face in public.
Yep.
And it's really a the reason is just...
If you saw me, you'd know why.
You'd know why. And then you'd be following him around the streets. It would be just embarrassing
it's
to him.
It's better for everybody.
And
really.
Embarrassing for you, and so we don't let it happen.
All right. All right. Got something about the news, though.
Yes, we do. A judge has granted class action status.
Okay.
To, as opposed to the Rochester way of saying class action status.
Yeah.
To a suit against Apple over its controversial, allegedly defective MacBook Butterfly keyboard design, agreeing that owners of any affected models in seven states qualify for the class. Beginning in 2018, several MacBook owners in seven states filed suits against Apple, claiming that the company knew the Butterfly-style switches were defective. Judge Edward J. Davila of U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California agreed to class action status to the suit. All customers residing in California, New York, Florida, Illinois, New Jersey, Michigan, or Washington State who purchased a 2015 to 2017 MacBook,
yep,
a 2016 to 2019 MacBook Pro, or a 2018 to 2019 MacBook Air now qualify for the class. The Butterfly-style keyboard design was controversial from the start. Apple designed it to be thinner and provide a shorter return, which would save space inside the computer chassis and make typing faster.
And officially, mission accomplished. They did do those things.
Yes. Some users hated the feel of it, while others loved it. The larger problem, however, seemed to be not one of preference, but rather one of basic function. The thinner keys proved to be more susceptible to failure when used in the actual real world, and even small particles of dust accumulated around the switches could make them stop working, requiring a full replacement of the entire keyboard. The plaintiffs in the suit allege that Apple's actions, as well as internal documents from the company, and that's the kicker, show that Apple knew the design was defective. They argue that the company violated several states' consumer protection laws when it kept selling the defective products to consumers. A 2018 report found that MacBooks needed keyboard-related repairs roughly 40% more often once Apple introduced the Butterfly-style keyboard. Repeat repairs, keyboards needing an expensive second or even third fix, are all also increased significantly. In June of 2018, Apple acknowledged the Butterfly key style switches were causing problems, and the company launched a keyboard service program specifically to address those issues. The program allowed for affected MacBook owners to have their keyboards replaced or repaired at no charge for the next 4 years, and some customers who had previously paid for those repairs became eligible to request refunds. By mid-2018, Apple only sold MacBook models with Butterfly keyboards. By 2019, however, Apple was already overhauling the keyboards in the MacBook Pro line, and by the 2020, the company completely phased out the Butterfly keyboard from its entire line of laptops. Apple's fixation on thinner, thinner, thinner has resulted in at least one bad keyboard and shorter battery life. So, what else has Apple sacrificed in their single-minded pursuit of thin? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Right. Well, you know, some people will say that's the price of innovation. You know, if you're going to try and design something slightly thinner, slightly thinner, slightly thinner, eventually you're going to get to a point where it's just not able to do what it's supposed to do.
That's right.
Now, ideally, you'd take a look at that before you ship the product and not get to the point where you're involved in a class action lawsuit. But we've seen that with the iPhone 6 and Bendgate, you know, where people were taking their phones and shoving them in their back pockets and sitting down, and suddenly the phone had the shape of their posterior instead of being a straight rectangle like you might expect.
Right.
It's part and parcel of this. I was in the camp that could not possibly stand the super low travel. I mean, it was just barely over
for
a millimeter's worth of travel.
It was horrifyingly bad.
And my wife heard me type on one of these, and she said, "Why are you so angry?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" And she said, "All I hear is tap, 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 tap." And it turns out my fingers are used to pressing spongier, longer throw keys, and they were interested in pressing that hard. And pressing that hard on that keyboard produced a giant tap dancing sound that sounds like you're typing really angrily.
And guess what? Decades and decades ago, IBM did all kinds of studies about keyboards.
Oh, sure.
And discovered that short throw.
Yeah, Selectric typewriters back in the day.
They discovered that short throw, smooshy or too hard keyboards cause carpal tunnel.
Hmm. Interesting.
And so when the Selectric keyboard came out,
yes,
it was scientifically designed to be exactly the right throw to let you type all day long.
Yes.
And not get carpal tunnel, which is why when laptops started to come out, people started getting more carpal tunnel syndrome.
Right. Well, and the keyboards were just dramatically different going to a laptop. When the first laptops had very large chiclet keys and significant throw. People still like the IBM ThinkPad series for its keyboard alone, especially professional writers and other things. That's kind of the weapon of choice, is to have a keyboard that you absolutely love typing on all day, because that's where you make your money.
Well, the very first keyboards that came out with the original PCs, I can remember to this day, we had, you know, a few of them down, and down this hallway, this one guy was down in this one office. His name was Dwayne. I'll never forget it. You could hear him going away at his keyboard all the way down the hallway, because he was a two-finger typist.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like he was slamming the keys on through to his desk. And he was pretty fast at it, too. And you'd hear this clicking, and they'd go over sometimes and just close his door. Because it got so loud.
But back in the manual typewriter days, that's what you had to do to get the heads to strike the plate.
And people that's what he was used to. Yeah, exactly.
No, I absolutely get it. I, like I said, I through college, I made money typing people's papers or writing them. That's a separate story. But
statute of limitations may have run out.
Have run out on that one. But so when I got to computers, I was actually used to the keyboard on desktops because they were IBM keyboards.
Sure,
and they were very much, if not identical, to the Selectric.
And I imagine they were designed to be.
They were specifically designed to be.
They wanted you to not have any reason to turn up your nose at the transition.
And I was a touch typist. I typed, and this is not a lie. You can ask some of the people I can tell. I can direct you to 90 words a minute. I was a very fast typist.
Okay.
But when I first saw laptops, I hated them because the keyboard was so bad compared to an IBM.
Right.
Keyboard.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's constrained, both in X and
well,
Y dimensions.
Well, the distance between the keys was wrong, the size of the keys was wrong,
the throw
of the keys was wrong.
The dampening,
there was
all that.
There was nothing right about the keyboard.
Right. And that's, I grew up in the personal computer era when computers were starting to come to the home. So I grew up in the era of the TRS-80 and the Commodore 64 and things like that.
Trash 80.
Yeah, and I would say that I don't think there were any of those that had a remarkably good keyboard. The C64, I love it as a device, and I think it plays a big role in my formative years. But the keyboard I always thought was complete trash.
It's trash.
The TRS-80 we had was only slightly better in terms of usability. And before that, we had the Timex Sinclair ZX81, which had a membrane keyboard, which was designed just to be as cheap as humanly possible. And it definitely accomplished that goal. But luckily, you know, at 9 or 10 years old, I couldn't type anyway. So it wasn't that big a deal. And I was just copying programs out of the back of magazines. So
that was the worst keyboard that I had the most fun with.
I had a Jupiter
Ace.
Okay.
Which was the Sinclair ZX, or as they would say, ZX81.
Yes.
It was a Jupiter Ace, was the Sinclair machine with fourth instead of basic.
Okay.
And so I was a fourth programmer at the time, so I wrote lots of programs. But Lord of mercy, while I loved that little machine, I detested that little chiclet keyboard.
Yeah.
PC Junior.
Yeah. Okay.
That was the coolest.
I asked for one of those for Christmas as a kid.
I had one of those.
You must have gotten mine.
Yeah.
No, my wife was, my late wife, I should say, God love her, was just about ready to pass out because she was getting ready to go on an audit trip 6 weeks over to London. And here I had this brand new PC Junior on the kitchen table, fully apart.
Sure.
And she goes, "It's a brand new computer. What are you doing?" I got to upgrade the memory. And that's back when you had to buy the memory chips.
One at a time.
Yeah. And then
you had to stick them in there and not make sure you didn't bend over any of the legs.
Yeah, the problem was that the legs were often too wide. So you'd have to put one side in
and then
kind of bend it until you could fit the other side in. Hope you didn't bend it too much.
It was.
One thing I was lucky that when you know, I got the memory sticks. They came, you know, I think it was like 4 of them in a slide tube.
Yep.
Sure.
And what you had to do,
fours or eights.
They give you this little tool that you could slide in between the arms
right.
and lift straight up.
Yes.
And that way you got them out so you could move them over, and they tell you how to, you know, you gave you instructions on how to get them in there so you don't bend any of those stupid little legs over.
Because if you do, you're done.
Oh, there were so many complaints. That's why they went to those tubes and put them in that slot.
So they wouldn't bend them,
like you were saying, because they'd go under.
That's true. It was a different time. It was a very hobbyist time. And, you know, I think about now, what are hobbyists doing? And a lot of them are getting into Raspberry Pi and Arduino and things like that. And I think you had something you wanted to say about Raspberry Pi?
Yeah.
You want to do it now or you want to save it for the next hour?
Yeah, we'll save that for the next hour.
I'll get some lunch.
Yeah, we'll get it because we're coming up onto that.
Okay.
And I could go off on that. But to go back to...
Maybe you should do it now.
No. Yeah. PC Junior, though, the fun of that, though, was the wireless keyboard.
Yeah.
Because you could have so much fun with it, you know, if you were in a class. And
I was in a class when they were first... Because I was selling computers at the time, and IBM... brought us to a class, and I discovered that all of the keyboards were on the same frequency.
Yeah.
Oh.
So if you aimed it right, I would be sitting in the back row while the guy was talking, and I would aim it at somebody else's machine and start playing music on their machine.
Fun.
Yep.
And they'd get into trouble. And we figured out one day how far away you could be. We had a PC Junior in the window. And Chuck went out in the
quad area
went out in the middle of the street because we were on Main Street at the time. Walked out to the middle of the street and was using the
keyboard
to do stuff. Cars whizzing by. So I was like, you're an idiot, but okay, that worked.
That was a very early for wireless keyboards, I must imagine.
Yeah, it was. Very early.
And the graphics, though, once you up the memory, the graphics on the PC Junior was really phenomenal.
They called it
the Peanut.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the graphics were phenomenal for the time.
Right.
Now they'd be considered,
laughable. Right.
But, but it was good. It was a good little machine. And I can remember finally getting a hard card for it.
Right.
And
you could network them, which was rare at the time.
Yep. Yep.
You could. It was, I think, Token Ring. Pretty sure it was
Probably.
Token Ring
yep.
network.
Yep. Yes.
At the time. Which meant it was very fast for the time.
Right.
And then when they used dual tokens, well, that doubled the speed.
Mm-hmm.
But that stuff was pretty hot stuff back in the day.
But you talk about the Trash 80.
Yep.
That was the very first computer. Well, second. We had another one up in the lab. And I don't know. I think that was a Honeywell. But the first personal one that we could work in our lab was a Trash 80. And I can still remember carrying around. I went out and quick got a box of 8-inch discs. So I could do some of the programming.
Right.
Remember this magazine?
How many K could you fit on one of those discs?
I think it was 8K.
8K?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but I can still remember, though, PC Link was one of the magazines, and I subscribed to that because you get so many different programs. They'd write in, like you said, fourth or different programs that you could sit there, type them on,
type them in,
and then save them to that 8-inch floppy. And I can remember communications one we did just for basic with the phone coupler and that type of stuff,
and saving those.
And we had
box. That was fun.
We had at least 3 or 4 boxes full of disc with different programs that during the night, because we worked the night shift, we plug in there and play with it. And that's back on the day, folks, when all you had was a monochrome screen and you just saw text.
And you were lucky to have it.
Darn right we were. We didn't have a mouse. We didn't have a CD-ROM drive.
No.
It was all key function.
It was very primitive, but we had so much fun with it.
It was a blast.
It was just about discovering, hey, what can I do? Or how do I do this? And, oh, why isn't that working? Aha, I found it. And, you know, it was...
Yeah.
It was.
I still do that. I program these days in Python.
Okay.
Which means I spend a lot of time swearing. A lot. I've learned new words. It's good.
That's
the
language I program in.
What?
Profanity.
That's why they call it a cursor.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. But I remember programming. I've said this before. I programmed a terminal program in Forth. It worked great on 300 baud. It worked great on 1200 baud. And then I had to rewrite the whole thing for a 2400 baud modem because the screen scrolled so fast.
Yeah,
I couldn't read it anymore. So I had to save everything to disk.
Right.
And that's when I discovered, that's better.
Yes.
So I can scroll through a bunch of stuff, log off, and save myself money.
Right.
And read it at my leisure.
Yeah, and you could always hit the up arrow key and scroll, to see
scroll back and forward. Yeah. And yeah, I did. I wrote all of that, and it was great.
And in that era, things were progressing so quickly that the problems that you had 2 months ago were solved by either a new product or a new process or a new way of thinking. And so much of that is removed from the consumer space now.
Yeah,
there are hobbyist things that you can do, 3D printing or VR or things of that nature. But it's the innovation is at the edges of that, and so much of what's in the middle is very, I won't say stagnant, but I say stable right now.
Well, that's like I've said. You go into a lot of these stores now. Whether it's Staples or Office Max or even the bigger stores, and you don't see the big boxes anymore. You see either laptops or tablets.
Right. That's what people want.
You don't see the big boxes because we're all moving towards cloud. Everything is cloud,
Everything is cloud.
And people don't want to have to buy specific furniture for their computer anymore. You don't buy the roll-top desk. You don't buy the desk that has the section for the tower case to live
That's
in.
That's been replaced by the standing desk.
Yes.
That's pretty much the thing.
A big horizontal surface on some legs that expand and contract to move further and closer to the floor.
Yeah, or you can sit there and literally move your whole desk, whether you want to stand or if you got a high chair. Up a little bit more than a normal chair.
Yeah.
They're all adjustable, and they find it more ergonomically, stressless on folks.
Mm-hmm. It reduces stress to have more positions to work with.
Mm-hmm. And, it's just a variety. Instead of just sitting down in a normal chair with your arms at this one position all the time, keying away, especially for programs and everything else, it's great. Or folks that are designing with CAD programs that had the versatility to be able to lift up and then lean over on it and have different positions to actually stretch and less cramping and everything else that they're finding.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. They're very common requests where I work for people to get units that will go on your existing desk and then sort of pivot upwards where you can put your equipment on it. And they're much less expensive than the complete replacement for the standalone desks. Some of those you will put a crank in them and you can crank them up manually, and others have a little motor in, so then you have to have your desk somewhere close to a power outlet, which is interesting. Oh, what do you need this extra power outlet for? Oh, I have to plug in my desk. So you can run your computer? No, I mean so I can actually use the desk.
Yeah, operate the hydraulics.
I need another one for the computer.
That's right.
Yeah. Operate the hydraulics.
I have I still use a desktop at home because I can put a gigantic monitor on it.
Sure.
A for programming and B because I'm old now.
Well, you can make everything nice and big.
Exactly. And I prefer that to a laptop. Also, again, I can get a decent keyboard.
Yes, that's right. You can.
And sure, I can plug all those things into a laptop, but the fact remains, you pay a premium for the portability.
That's true.
I would rather spend the same amount of money on a desktop and get more RAM, faster processor, bigger hard drive,
and not have the portability.
And I don't need the portability because I've got a Chromebook.
Sure,
and I've got a laptop.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's enough.
I don't, I don't go sit. I have a friend who is a programmer for a living. He's a freelance programmer.
Okay.
And he spends most of his time on a beach somewhere in the world.
Hmm.
He travels all over the world.
Well, that's the thing. You don't need
it. And he does it with his laptop. But I don't do that. And I want to be, when I write books, I want to write on a decent keyboard.
Yeah. That and the screen too,
and I want to be able to see the screen.
Right.
So,
different structure
for me,
folks.
A desktop is a much preferable thing.
Right.
Well, that's why I talking about being able to see things. I wrote to this one company because they, for the radios and that, they have this one program that you can enter stuff in. And I wrote to them and said, you know, not for nothing. A lot of your users are 50 plus.
True. Okay.
And I said, it'd be great if your program, I could sit there and adjust the text size.
Ah.
Be able to make the print a little bit bigger to see.
Right.
Because it's very hard. There's small slots in it. It's like 10-point text that right. you're typing
and again,
in.
And if you're on a 28-inch monitor, then not a big deal.
No, when it's still a little. It's still small. Yeah. It doesn't, you know, go big. When, you know, if I were to expand it out, it doesn't.
Right.
It won't do it. And that's very hard, and it's not easy.
Right. Well, and we should tell listeners that you can definitely already bump up the text inside your web browser pretty easily. On the Mac, you can hold Command Plus
right.
to increase that, and Command Minus. And on the PC, I believe it's what, Windows Plus and Minus?
Or whatever. But
or Control.
Control. All right. That music tells us you have wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But do not go away. Because there's a whole nother hour of this nonsense coming up after a slightly longer break. We will be back in just a few minutes with David Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Sound Bites right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you because with your support, we remain member-supported. Jazz 90.1. Take a quick bio break, and we will see you on the other side. Don't go too far.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. You're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Sound Bites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. For those of you who are just tuning in the first hour, we had Mark from Greece who gave us an interesting app for the phone. It's called Battery Charge Notifier.
Yes, for and Android
phones. I've put that on the list on the Soundbites website.
Good.
And thanks to the people who have voted already. That's very nice. But the rest of you should be voting now. Go to soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. And vote in the poll. In the meantime, let's start with another piece of news. Yeah, this is going to...
You're going to love this.
The Federal Communications Commission, God bless them, wants to hear from internet users about their experiences trying to find good broadband service. The FCC announced on Monday that it is seeking firsthand accounts on broadband availability and service quality directly from consumers as part of a new data collection effort. They have no idea what they're letting themselves in for.
Please send your 8K video at 120 frames per second and upload
Opening
it to
Pandora's box.
People who live in areas where ISPs either haven't deployed service or have failed to upgrade old networks may be especially interested in participating. Far too many Americans are left behind in access to jobs, education, and healthcare if they do not have access to broadband, acting FCC Chairwoman Jessica Rosenworcel said. Collecting data from consumers who are directly affected by the lack of access to broadband will help inform the FCC's mapping efforts and future decisions about where service is needed. If you have a specific problem and want a response from your ISP, you can also file a complaint against the ISP at the Consumer Complaint Center that the FCC has been operating for years. Share your broadband experience form as part of a larger project to improve the FCC maps that are supposed to show where broadband exists and where it doesn't. The current maps are not very accurate. For people who want to keep track of the project's progress, the FCC set up a web page that it said will serve as an informational hub for the broadband data collection program, highlighting milestones and providing updates for consumers, state, local, and tribal government entities, and other industry shareholders. Stakeholders. The FCC's broadband maps help the commission develop policy and decide which parts of the country should get the most broadband deployment funding. But the maps have long been inaccurate, largely because the FCC's Form 477 data collection program that requires ISPs to report coverage lets an ISP count an entire census block as served, even if it can serve just one home in that block. Now, please understand, this site is for areas that have little or no broadband access. It's not for you to whine because green light hasn't hit your neighborhood yet.
Right.
I will put up a couple of links to the FCC Consumer Complaint Center and the FCC Data Collection Hub when I get a chance. But you can give us a call and tell us about your data speed, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. I think that's a beautiful thing. I think it's great that
the FCC is looking to
fix that. And it's hopefully. Really, we're talking about a lot of rural areas have nothing but they have two choices:
right,
phone line or
satellite.
And you're right; those are the two choices. My sister-in-law's on satellite. And,
okay, like a HughesNet.
It ain't cheap.
No, it's not cheap, and the latency is what
latency
used to
is
be
pretty horrible.
Pretty bad.
It's fine for Netflix.
Sure.
I mean you buffer like mad, but
at first.
Right, but it doesn't stop you from watching the movies.
Yeah, it's like preheating your oven.
Right, but internet access is not great. We were there last Christmas. My daughter works remotely.
Okay.
And she spent most of the time mumbling under her breath. I don't want to know what she was mumbling.
Right.
But it was
slow. It wasn't God Bless America.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it wasn't.
So the new hotness is the thing Elon Musk has been launching a lot of rockets about. It's that Starlink internet service where they're going to have a bunch of low Earth orbiting satellites that are going to provide service to you. You buy, I think, for $500 a kit that comes with a little dish that tracks the satellite, and for about $100 a month, I think, you get some pretty impressive speeds.
Yeah, you do. There's still some latency,
sure,
but you get good speeds.
But the satellites, I think, are a lower Earth orbit than the Hughes stuff, so technically you should be getting slightly better.
Yeah, quarter second or below,
yeah,
ping
times. Right. Yeah.
But still, when you talk about the costs of that,
mm-hmm,
a lot of the rural families can't afford that.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's just not something they can do.
Not in the budget.
So anyway, they're doing that for the FCC, and we'll see how that plays out. In the meantime, we'll go to the phones, and our next caller is Judy from Webster, New York. Hi, Judy, what's up?
Hello. A little while ago, you were talking about phones.
Yes.
And I've always been a Samsung Galaxy person until about a year ago, and then I went to a Pixel phone, and I swear the Pixel phone was possessed.
Oh, no.
But anyway, this morning I went to T-Mobile, and they changed my phone. I'm back with Galaxy, the S21 5G. But there's no instruction or anything with it. And even though I've been a Samsung person, you know, I'm sure that it's changed since my last one. So I'm wondering where I could get a tutorial or something.
Well, okay, so you've got the S21. So you can do a couple of things. There are online, but an instruction thing. Okay.
Yeah.
That's harder. What sort of stuff are you looking to learn?
Well, just some basic stuff on the phone because, it took me a year to get used to the Pixel phone, And now I'm back with this, and it, of course it doesn't do the same things when I try to do what I did with the Pixel.
Right.
Right. Yeah, it's got a new interface. You know, a couple of months ago, the Unpacked event that Samsung has, they released a new product called the One UI version 3, which is an all-new interface for the S21. What I did find was on YouTube when I searched for S21 interface, and I think that might be the key word, I was able to find several videos that talk about the differences between how it used to be and how it is now. And I think that those might provide some help. I think there was also a channel called App Find that had a video titled Samsung Galaxy S21 Complete Beginner's Guide that might be a good place to start. It might cover some things you already know, but chances are good that it'll at least introduce you to some new features.
Refresh or
at least
your memory.
Show you where those features that you know and love have moved to. Okay. I'll make sure to pass these links over to Nick, and we'll get them on the website for you.
Oh, that would be great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it probably won't happen until the break, but I will get them up.
That's all right. I'm cooking for company tomorrow, first time in a year and a half, so it's
good. Boy.
Good for you. We'll be right over.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Judy.
Perfect.
Thank you so much.
Yep, thanks. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I'm finding that these days, anything I want to learn, whether it's how to change the oil on my lawnmower or how to work on my dishwasher, YouTube, chances are good, somebody's already done it and pointed a camera at it before me. And that means that I can spend my time watching and sometimes rewatching and rewatching.
And rewatching, yeah.
To see what does this look like once you take it apart? And, oh, am I going to need a special tool? And, hey, I used to be able to do this kind of thing on my computer, but they've changed where it went to. How do I learn about this?
Right.
And YouTube has been a great resource for me, and I think it can be really valuable for a lot of people.
Yeah, there's just so much stuff you can do that way. Yeah.
And the
all
printed
right.
manuals days, those are just gone.
Yeah, but nobody makes manuals anymore.
Cuts cost.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Richard from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Richard, what's up?
Hey, I just bought a used 2015 MacBook Pro 13-inch on eBay, and I'm wondering what I need to do with it to feel safe. It looks like it got a fresh reinstall of Catalina, and there are a few pieces of software on there that I would like to use if that's possible. I was assuming I would just wipe it and redo it, but I'm wondering if I really need to do that.
So you said that you want to know what to do to feel safe. Safe from what exactly?
I don't know.
You mean on the internet or locally?
Yeah, right. That there's no malware or, you know, nobody's watching or listening.
Okay.
I'm a little paranoid.
I can help with this. If you want to feel as safe as is possible with this device that you bought from another person, the best thing to do is to make sure you're near some Wi-Fi or connect a network cable to it and boot it up and hold down on this one, I believe it's the Command-R key. If you hold down the Command key, which is next to the space bar, and hold down R while you start up the computer, that'll tell the computer to go check for Wi-Fi. Connect to Wi-Fi, and then go talk directly to Apple through a secure connection. And at that point, you can erase the drive internally and lay down a fresh copy of macOS, the latest copy that Apple believes will run on that machine. And at that point, everything that's on the device will be something that came directly from Apple themselves. So there won't be any other third-party software that you might have to worry about. And while those applications that may have been on there before may have been things that you can use legally, it's quite possible that they may be licensed to the previous owner. So having a nice fresh copy of the OS will make those things go away. But in terms of safety, that's the place that you'd like to be.
Right. It's got Microsoft Office and a couple of other things.
Yeah.
Or is it Axiom? That, you know, kind of, it's mostly the Office, but I have that on my old computer. I could put those old. Okay, so that's really the only way to be sure of that, is that what you're saying?
That's, if it was a significant concern for you, that is what I would do. You know, if I were to come and visit you and smile and wave at you and to help you directly, that's what we'd be doing, because I know that the latest OS will receive all the latest security updates that Apple knows about and has made available, and you'll be as good as possible on that machine. So you can fire it up and run this and then go enjoy it.
Okay.
And then once you've got that done, you might want to look at putting some antivirus and anti-malware stuff on it.
Sure.
If you head on over to Security Tango, Security Tango, at securitytango.org.
Yep, there's a Mac section there. And I'm willing to bet one of the items there is probably either ClamXAV or Malwarebytes.
Yeah, it's actually securitytango.com. Apparently, I just need better drugs.
No, soundbytes.org, securitytango.com.
Right, exactly. And each and if you go there under Let's Dance, which is one of the menu choices across the top, you'll see the Mac Arena. See their dances under Let's Dance.
Not the Mac Merengue?
I've done that dance.
Right, and that's and that will lead you through several things that you can do. Make sure your system is up to date and install ClamX or Sophos.
Yep, Sophos or Malwarebytes.
Malwarebytes, MaxScan, of course, Komodo, Malwarebytes as well.
Sure.
And then you're pretty much done.
Right.
Apple really cares about security, and I think that if you can get to a place where you've got a fresh copy of macOS, you're going to be about as good as anybody can be. So
that's good.
I'm confident.
Yeah. Okay, because I bought this thing to do my taxes, because TurboTax won't work with my old machine. It needed a more recent OS. So I'm thinking, you know, if I'm doing my taxes, I should be secure.
Yeah. No, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, great.
All right, thanks, Richard, and good luck. Before we get back to the phones, let me remind everybody that tomorrow night at 9 p.m., we will be hosting the Soundbites Lounge. If you go to our website at soundbites.org, again, bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, you'll see the second link down is the Soundbites Lounge. Click on that. It will take you to a page where at 9 p.m. tomorrow night will be a portal into a video chat. And, of course, you don't have to turn on your camera, but you can go there and ask us any questions you want, and it will be our pleasure to answer them, and we can chit-chat about stuff, and we can do any dang thing we want to do. And that's tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. In the meantime, let's head back to the phones. Our next caller is Judy from Honey I Falls, New York. Hi, Judy. What's up?
Hi, I just bought a second property in Honeyway, and the choice for internet is between Spectrum and something called Empire Access, which is fiber, but I've never heard of them before, and I wondered if you have any experience with them.
I have not personally had any experience with Empire Access, but...
I think they're out of Prattsburg?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I personally have not used them, but I have no reason to think that they would not deliver on what they say they would.
Basically, many people seem to like it. They have...
We're doing some searching here for you.
Quite a number of decent reviews on Google Reviews. Hold on, I'm just looking at the Google Reviews right now. Some people, of course, are upset about the price. I get that.
Sure.
But there's 110 reviews, 3.5 stars. So that's pretty doggone. That's pretty doggone
good.
For
an ISP, that's not too bad.
And also, pay attention, of course, to the contract.
Yes. It's the details that matter here.
Right.
The big things to look for are how fast is the service coming to your house or to the property? How fast is the service going out from your property to the rest of the world? And they'll give you those numbers in the units are megabits per second.
And how long of a contract you're signing.
Right. How long is the contract in months? And what's the monthly payment? And then you might ask them, is there what's called a bandwidth cap? That is the total amount of information you can move into your house or out of your house before some different rate applies.
Yeah, quite often they call it a data cap.
Right. So those are the big things to look for. The upstream speed, the downstream speed, the bandwidth cap, the length of the contract, and the price. And if you can get those things spelled out from each provider, then hopefully they'll either be relatively competitive with each other or one will be a clear winner.
And don't be surprised if the down is a bigger number than the upload.
Yes, that's normal.
Right.
And they seem to be at $50 a month for 100 megabit down, 20 megabits up. No data caps, no overusage fees.
Okay. That seems reasonable.
That's good.
Faster than phone.
Yeah, it's not super fast, but in terms of broadband, but it's acceptable.
Yeah. And it's faster than cable.
Sure. If $50 a month is good, yeah, you might see what Spectrum offers and see what they can do at same price or different price. But those are the things that I would look at if I were comparing.
In general, I'm a huge fan of fiber.
Sure, yes. All other things being equal,
yeah. I'm a huge fan of fiber. I also like the fact that my having my internet separate from my cable mm-hmm. television means right. that if one goes out, I still got the other.
Okay.
Got it.
Right?
So if the internet goes out, you can still go watch TV.
I can still go watch TV. If the TV goes out, I can still do Netflix if I want to. So, so that's you know, that's my thing. But in general, if they have no data caps, no overusage fees, that's very good. And it looks like they have different speed things you can get.
But in general, we're not seeing any red flags.
Right.
No.
Or even yellow flags.
So if, for example, they don't have a contract, so you can
shut it off whatever month you want.
Right. So you can then get it and say, okay, I've tried it for 6 months or 2 months or 5 months or a year, and I just want to go somewhere else now. And you can still do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, see if that's an option.
Make sure you're not locked into, say, a two-year agreement.
Right.
You know, you try it out. Right. Do a trial period. See if they offer a trial period.
And they might not.
Yeah.
But it's worth asking.
Probably not, but still. Yeah.
Thank you. This is very helpful, and I'm both a member and a subscriber to Ask Nick.
Yeah, I love to hear that. Thank you.
Yay.
Okay.
Now you got what other task, though?
Thank you, Judy. Yeah.
And that's to tell your friends.
Oh, please.
Always.
Oh,
there we are. That's what we want to hear.
Thank you, Judy.
How nice.
Stay safe.
All right. Thanks, Judy.
You too. Bye.
Yeah. For those of you who do not know, Ask Nick, I used to do a newspaper column.
And a puppet show.
And a puppet show. I did used to do puppet shows. I used to do a column called Ask Nick in the local Gannett paper. They stopped that. They stopped a lot of that stuff.
They stopped a lot of the paper.
Well, so now it is a weekly newsletter, an emailed newsletter that you can sign up for at AskNick.com.
Cool.
And I've got a number of subscribers. I'm very proud of them. They're nice people.
And what kinds of things do you publish on this?
I answer their questions mostly.
Ah, okay.
So it's very much like the newspaper column.
Right.
So I answer whatever questions they ask.
So you might learn something just by being a subscriber, and even if you don't ask a question.
That's exactly right.
Learn by osmosis.
Yes.
Just by being nearby.
Yep. In fact, we're very lucky that I've had so many good subscribers and
who ask
a lot of really intelligent questions, and every once in a while I just throw in a piece of news or a piece of
current thing I found, or whatever.
So as a member you get all of that, so that's kind of nice.
Well, anytime you can talk about something that you're passionate about, that's always, you know, that's a great way.
Well,
to
that's live. Just it, and having that kind of outlet is actually pretty nice. I've been very pleased. I've been using a thing called Mailer Lite.
Okay.
To send it out.
Isn't that a beer?
Yeah. It's mailer time, and I really appreciate it. I really like the product. So if you're sending out a newsletter, take a look at them first. Right now, I'm still in the free tier.
Okay.
I get 12,000 emails a month. Frankly, I don't have that many subscribers.
Hey, if you get to above that, that's a good problem to have.
That's exactly right. Happy to pay.
Yeah.
That's the problem you want.
I get beyond that. But
that would be a very good goal to achieve.
That's exactly right.
So tell everyone, tell your friends.
Tell all your friends. Tell all your enemies. I don't care. Tell everybody.
That's right.
But that's what we're aiming for. And in the meantime, we're going to take a quick break. Man, nice segue. Good timing. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Dennis Worster, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here in the truly great and truly grateful to you that we continue to be member-supported. Jazz 90.1. See you in just a minute or two.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm still Dennis Worster.
Still?
Yeah. It's working out pretty good for me.
Well, that's it. It's working out pretty good for us, too. And yeah. 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And Dave, you had a...
Yeah. We'll finally get into talking about this since we got a few minutes.
Before you do that, I just want to tell people that I put up a couple more things on the website. The beginner's guide to the Galaxy S21 and how to reinstall Mac OS.
Yep. All right.
So go ahead. Sorry.
Sorry, Dave.
No.
Thanks to Dennis who found both of those things.
Like we've ever been rigid in the 30 years that we gotta do stuff at a certain... Nah. Hasn't happened, won't ever happen again. All right, folks. As you folks know, I've played around with our Raspberry Pis quite a bit. And what new operating system I've found, it's called Twister OS.
Okay.
And Twister OS is an image that you can put on your Raspberry Pi 4, and it literally has everything built right into it. And by that, I mean, it even has different desktops that you could select, whether you want a Windows 95 look, whether it's a Windows 7, Windows 10. It already has preloaded with it, because it's a full package, LibreOffice.
Hmm.
And it runs a lot of other apps. So if you're tired of Windows and want something that looks like Windows but runs a little more efficient and runs on a Raspberry Pi, as we've said before, Raspberry Pis are getting to where they run very efficiently. I'm, you know, running it on an SSD drive, so it loads fast. Everything, you know, I've got a 8 gig model 4, mm-hmm. and the thing just streams along. There's a lot of different programs. Matter of fact, there's a couple other ham programs I'm trying out on it just to see if I can get them to work on that. And surprisingly, even Chromium works on it.
Really?
No problem. And so you can still do all your internet stuff and hook it up to, because of having the HDMI on the Raspberry Pi 4, you can hook it up to a big 55-inch screen and have it just surround you. But it's a great program. There's YouTube videos on how to set it up. So if you're looking for something else, and you don't have to know a lot of commands, so you can just put it on, burn it, with a Raspberry Pi Imager. It's a new program out that will allow you to hook up, say, your hard drive to your machine. You can then use Imager, the Raspberry Pi Imager, to burn the image to the hard, this portable hard drive. You then hook it up to the Raspberry Pi. It boots up, loads everything that you need to do, and then voila, it's right there on the screen to use with a keyboard and mouse. And then it's just another solution which we try to offer that replaces Windows.
I have to tell you the other thing that I did this week with my Raspberry Pi.
Yeah.
I now have a tablet that is the screen to my Raspberry Pi.
Cool.
So my
tell us more about that.
My Raspberry Pi is upstairs in the computer room.
Okay. Yeah.
But I can be anywhere in the house because it's still just on my local network.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And it's essentially just a remote desktop.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so I can be sitting downstairs with my tablet.
Right. Poke at the screen.
Poke at the screen. I can text or I can move stuff around with my finger because it's it reacts properly to that. And I can do anything I want on that Raspberry Pi. So I have all the power of my Raspberry Pi 4 on my old and very inexpensive Kindle Fire.
Cool.
And it gets the job done.
And it gets the job done.
Well, that's
done
the thing.
Nice.
That's, you know, I always compare a Raspberry Pi to like a bar of soap. It's not much bigger than a bar of soap.
It's about the same size, yeah.
You know? And the power in it. Like you, I've got two Raspberry Pi 4s. One, I had, if folks don't remember, I had an old file server that's got to be about 15 plus years old. And I was a little concerned about it because, as you well know here on Soundbites, we probably always are preaching backup, 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 and oh, maybe just have another backup. And you never have too many. So for the low cost, I wound up getting a Raspberry Pi with an SSD, 1 gig or 1 terabyte hard drive, and it just replaced my file server. And it's fast. I mean, I can back things up to it, no problem. And I have now a second one that I run programs off of it. And boy, some of these programs load so darn fast with the SSD drive. It's like I click on it versus my Windows 7 machine. I can compare the two, and it's like, yeah, set that machine aside, and I can replace that space with this, like I say, machine that's no bigger than a bar of soap on my desktop, but yet I've got it hooked up to two 21-inch monitors. So, you know, I've got all the desk space, all the speed, and, you know, I'm getting really comfortable with the LibreOffice.
Yeah.
I'm playing around with that and doing different stuff. Like I said, it's another word processor, and they do things just a little different, but they're still all there. It's like you always said about the cars. You know, you might get a different model car. It still drives the same, but they might have moved the buttons around a little bit.
Yep.
And the same with this. So if you're looking for another operating system that you want to play around with, I highly recommend Twister OS.
And I put a link on our website.
And there's a few videos out there that this guy is constantly updating and trying out different tricks and everything else. He's even put it on a Raspberry Pi 400. So and he's,
I still want one. I still want one.
That looks cool for the price with the keyboard and everything else right there and having it. But it's a fun operating system to play with. And like I say, you're not tethered to, with this last update with Windows, I have had so many folks complain because, you know, they go to print and they get that screen lockup.
Yep.
You know, and they quick took that down too. That patch is not there anymore.
That's right.
And got rid of it. And, you know, it was just a pain in the butt. And I hate being, you know, an experiment have you for Microsoft and constantly trying out some of their patches, seeing, oh, if it works or not, or is it going to brick my machine?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't have time for that.
That's why so many people like Chromebooks. That's why so many people are looking to Linux. It's it gives you a freedom that you don't have with Microsoft.
And that's where I think like this Twister OS and the ARMs for Windows, those are all systems that you can put on there and don't worry about, you know, all of a sudden getting this latest update that's going to trash your machine.
Yep.
You know, I think folks are really, and they're easy to set up. You don't have to be some big genius. What I always tell folks is, all right, if you've got a separate computer, fine. Go ahead and bring up the YouTube video. Start it. And as you're going along, stop it. Take notes. And then you can go over on the Raspberry Pi and try setting it up.
Yep.
And just stop and go. You're not on a time rush. just take your time and do it. And anybody could walk through it if they just take the time to stop the videos, take notes, and follow instructions. Don't get click happy. That's right. Always the biggest thing a lot of folks. They get impatient and they get click happy, and then they might miss something. Oh, I can't do this.
You're right.
Yes, you can. Anybody can if they just take the time and have the patience.
And the Raspberry Pi, for Pete's sake, the 400, even the 400, under $100.
Yeah.
Now, you have to have a keyboard and a mouse and a... Most of us have an extra one of those lying around.
Mm-hmm.
And even so, with the Raspberry Pi 400, you can get the whole thing with the mouse. It is a keyboard. You need a. Right.
So it's a lot like the spiritual successor to the Commodore 64 we were
talking
really
about. It really is. You really need to take a look at it. It's got the chiclet keyboard. It's not quite a chiclet keyboard.
I have a Pi 3 and an original Pi at my house. The original Pi is running Pi Hole, which is that DNS, caching DNS server that helps block ads and tracking cookies and those kinds of things. But even, the Pi Model 4, the fancy version with 8 gigs of RAM in it, is... retails for $75 or so.
That's what I've got at home.
Yeah, Pi 4 with 8 gig. Super high performance. And it uses, for power, you just plug it into a USB-C port. So any, modern phone charger should be enough to get it running. And then you just need a cable to spit it out to HDMI for your monitor. And you just plug in your standard wired keyboard and mouse.
Yep.
It's got a full network jack, so you can run Wi-Fi if you want, but
well,
if you
a lot
want
of them have
the,
yeah,
network,
they have Wi-Fi built into a lot of the Pi 3s.
And for projects, you can get what's called a hat. It's a separate little circuit board that plugs in on top of this one, and it wears it like a hat. That's why they call it that. And it will let you do something called power over Ethernet. So if you have a project where you've got a device that can supply power over that network cable, then you can run your entire Raspberry Pi without having to be plugged into the wall for power.
Right.
Which is pretty cool.
And for example, at Canakit, there are many places you can get it.
I just happen to mostly buy mine
at Canakit. you can get the Raspberry Pi 400 with 4 gig of RAM, a 16 gigabyte SD card, mouse, HDMI cable, US keyboard, power supply.
Is that a wired mouse or a wireless mouse?
Wired.
Okay.
Total price, $100.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
a little tax and shipping on there, and you're good to go.
Exactly right. And you could put the Twister OS on it if you wanted to. You could do whatever you like to it.
Right. Make a great gift, too.
Makes a great gift.
Just put that in the Easter basket.
There you go.
Why not?
It's so simple to do, and like I said, it's cost effective. I mean, I was looking at this one, they call it a Cron clock. And
sure.
It shows the gray lines and all that. I was pricing them, and they wanted $400 and $500.
Yep.
It's like, oh heck no! I went and took one of my Raspberry Pi 3s, the older one.
Mm-hmm.
They had a video on how to set up the Cron clock on this, so I put it on a 7-inch screen. So with my Raspberry Pi 3 and the Cron screen that I already had, I've got the clock right there, and it didn't cost me anything but
an
hour's worth of time.
Yeah,
and it's right there, and it works great.
Yep. You've got to put on your entrepreneurial hat and start building these and selling them for $300.
There you go.
you could take over the entire market.
Well, like I say, it's so easy, and the guy, in fact, you could either do it to where it takes over the whole screen,
right,
or you can put it within a window.
Sure.
Now, for people who don't know what gray lines are, that's when you want to keep track of when sunset and sunrise are happening.
Yeah, it's just
you may have seen
the
map with the sine curve, dark on one side, light on the other.
Yeah, it follows what they call the gray line. Is sunset, it's the gray time, or even sunrise.
And this is important to ham radio operators because of the ionosphere, I assume.
Yes.
Okay.
We can get better distance.
At night?
Following the gray line. Right?
Oh, following the gray line. Yeah.
Following the gray line. If you hit the gray line, your signal will travel a lot farther. And of course, right now, for folks that, whether they know it or not, and it might interfere some of them, these folks that do GPSing, the sunspot activity is starting to pick up. We're at the bottom of the cycle, and we're starting up. Because the sun goes through what they call a 10-year cycle. And that it can affect your GPS, your phones, and everything else, because the sunspots are going to get more active over the next 10 years.
So those put out big bursts of energy.
Yeah.
That the Earth receives.
And, I mean, I can be talking on my radio and then all of a sudden hit somebody over in Japan or my friend down in Australia just over what they call the gray line and then skip. It bounces up off the atmosphere.
But in the middle of that, you can get a sunspot that kicks you right off again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And you are going to find over the next 5 years until we pass peak sunspot activity that you may have a problem with GPS.
Mm-hmm.
You may have a problem connecting people to your phone.
Yep.
You could have all kinds of problems all over the place with any wireless connection. And there's nothing anybody's ever going to be able to do about that except maybe turn your house into a
Faraday cage. Yep.
Faraday cage.
Or
move to
Mars.
Or move to Mars. Now, Mars has it worse because they don't have the magnetic.
They don't?
They don't have as big a magnetic field as we do, which helps us, which shields us from a lot of the electromagnetic radiation that gets sent out by sunspots.
Mm-hmm. See, I got to start subscribing to your newsletter.
You clearly do. And you know, if you had said, should I move to Mars, Dennis from Rochester, I would have been able to answer that.
Yes. Maybe not.
Right.
It's you're a little
just
early.
Yet. Yeah.
Hang on for a little while if you can.
On the other hand, if you wait for 5 years and then take off into space, you could turn into the Fantastic Four.
Ooh.
That, there's that.
I haven't done that before.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's that. But yeah, we know that many of you are just happy with whatever you've got on your desk right now, but a lot of you still like to play around. And for less than $100 or up to $100 if you get the 400, you can get a whole new system with a whole new operating system and do whatever you want. And if you spend the $100 for the Raspberry Pi 400, all you need is a monitor with an HDMI connection.
Yeah, or plug it into your TV. You know, go super old school
80s. And that would include
like
your TV. You're right.
Back in the day when we used to plug stuff
also,
in the TV.
I remember TV.
Does that come, you're going to need a hard drive with that too.
You get a 16 gig card.
Right. Yeah. See,
you could buy others. If you wanted to spend.
Stick a flash drive in one of the ports.
If you wanted to spend another $30, a whole another $30.
Okay.
You would get 128 gig EVO. SSD card for $30.
Amazing. Now, if you really want to go super fast and don't mind spending a little bit of money, it's just getting an external SSD card.
Right, and the adapter.
Hard drive.
$85 gives you 500 gigs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so...
And that is... I can tell you like from 15. Experience, it is phenomenal.
Yep.
Things just... You click on it, boom.
It's so fast, it makes you chuckle.
Yeah, well, it doesn't have those moving platters.
Yeah.
Like on an old hard drive. It's just like an SSD card, but, you know, a lot more space.
And I think that's another thing to bring up is that the lack of moving parts involved means that this is a decent thing for your preteens or your teens to check out if they are technically minded and kind of interested in this sort of thing. This really would make an interesting gift for them, and there's a big community around it, so it's not like you're buying into some dead ecosystem here. And a lot of hobbyists, and what you can do with it is limited only by what you can think of to do with it.
And like I said, it's becoming more the wave of the future because like we said, big boxes are going away.
Yep.
And we're finding alternatives to Windows. Because a lot of folks are tired of Windows and it crashing the system and doing it. And a lot of it is all cloud-based.
Right.
So they don't have to have a lot of the stuff down on their desktop anymore. That's why we've said Chromebooks and everything else. If you don't want to get into Linux and learning all about that type of language and everything else, again, a Raspberry Pi with either putting Windows ARM on it or Windows Twister or Twister OS... They're easy systems that you can put on. You just load, and it looks like Windows.
Right. And of course, if you still want to use the cloud, you can use the browser to go to Google Drive or OneCloud or iCloud or whatever
Chromium
you want to do.
Still works on both of them.
Right. And in fact, if you wanted to buy a Raspberry Pi 4 with a 500-gig hard drive, it costs you $184.95. What else are you going to buy for $184.95? And again, you still have to add a monitor, but many of us have an extra monitor sitting around or a TV, that anything that has an HDMI connection, and you're there. So if you're looking to play, and Lord knows we're still pretty much stuck at home.
Yeah, for a little while.
For a little while. So, you know, get yourself something to play with and learn to use it. You know?
And again, like you were saying, though, it's not much expense. You can have a lot of fun. You learn a lot more.
And you end up with a whole new computer.
And right now, I knock on wood, but we'll see. Yeah.
Even the old ones are still fun to play
with. As far as viruses and spyware and all that, they're still safe.
Well, you can still, you know, there's a Linux section in the Security Tango.
Yep.
And you should put those on. I did that on my 4. You can,
And again, even with the Twister and all that, putting on other apps is very easy.
Yep.
Putting on other features, and that's the thing, though. Right now, it's so evolving. More and more, I check weekly, and there's always other stuff that's being added on because it's the newest trend.
Right.
Getting away from Windows.
Right.
I hate to say it, but, you know, Windows has served its time. And it's like, yeah, it's okay, but...
Well, even Microsoft, they've told, like we said, we keep saying, they have told their investors, we are moving away from selling an operating system to putting it on the cloud.
Yeah.
You know, platform as a service, PaaS, they call it.
And it, because people want to be able to access it from wherever they are, whether they're at home or they're at work, out at a coffee shop, or halfway around the world. They want to be able to get at their data.
Right.
And that's the way to do it, is with the cloud. I can remember back when somebody said, I got some photos in there. Oh, well, you have to show them to me. I said, well, here, I can do it right now. Pulled up my Google Photos. All my photos are there.
Yep.
I said, they go, wow, that's cool. How'd you do that? I said, just comes with Google. I said, it doesn't matter whether I'm here or wherever. I can pull up documents and everything else because it's all saved up on the cloud.
Right.
Right. And again, as we recommend, make backups.
Yeah, that's what perfect segue. That's what I was going to say. That don't get complacent just because it's saving it up on the cloud. That's like I said, I have this other Raspberry Pi 4 that's my server. I back up to the cloud. I back up automatically to that server. It's just a routine that it does. And then I have another hard drive, that the Buffalo drive, that it backs off there. So I've got literally 3 copies.
You got to.
And I feel a lot easier, safer when I do, because I had a Windows 10 machine with that stupid patch, bricked the machine.
Yeah.
But it was like, no big deal. I really don't have a lot of stuff loaded there because it's all up on the cloud. So setting up the emails and everything else, no big deal.
Yep. It's simple and it's convenient.
A lot less headaches and frustration, especially if you lose something that, you know, you spent a lot of time on, or photos that were critical.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, because you can't bring those memories back. Once they're gone, you know, the photos are gone, they're gone.
Right.
And I hate to say it, and we've had to say that to a number of folks. Sorry, you should have backed up. Well, and we've heard it countless times.
I meant to.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
All the good intentions won't bring it back.
Universe doesn't care about what you meant to.
Mm-mm. But yeah,
sorry.
Mm-mm. Raspberry Pi, lots of fun. We highly recommend those.
And now I want the 400 now again. Doggone you people.
Your birthday's coming, isn't it?
I'm going to have to look.
Not for a while. But
anniversary?
I may have to. I'm at Easter. I might get myself an Easter present.
Sure. Put some bunny ears on it.
Ooh.
Exactly.
Why not?
Well, it's kind of pink and white. So
yeah, I'm gonna have to look. I'm gonna have to look at that now. You got me going on trouble.
Maybe you can buy two and get a deal.
There's an idea.
Ooh.
Basically, though, really, hook it up to my television set. Click over to it. Do anything I want to do on it.
Wireless. Yeah. And, you know, all the modern TVs are going to be nice and sharp.
And, of course, I can remote desktop into it.
Yeah.
So I don't even have to do that if I don't want to. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. All right, that music tells us we're done. We are done. I want to thank all 67 people who voted in the poll. If you have not yet voted in the poll, please do. Soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. And vote in the poll. And in addition, I want to thank Dave Enright. I definitely want to thank Dennis Worcester, who for the last few weeks has been kind and generous enough to come in here.
It's been fun.
And sit in a seat and put up with our nonsense. And we appreciate it very much. I'm Nick Francesco. You have been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And as I continue to remind you, truly grateful to you, because it is you who keeps us on the air, because we are solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.